Good morning and welcome, everyone. It's great to have you here today for the conversation and webinar. Welcome to How Western States Can Achieve Grid Decarbonization with Singularity, Energy Tag, and Clean Counts. I'm Rob Davis, Chief Growth Officer for Clean Counts, and delighted to pass the microphone to Brian Rounds, our Vice Chair and a consultant with AESL Consulting. Joined the organization in 2016 after spending 9 years as a utility analyst for the South Dakota State Public Utilities Commission, including being appointed by the governor of South Dakota to serve on the Western Interconnect Regional Advisory Body, which advises WEC, NERC, and FERC on reliability standards. Brian, thank you so much for joining. Over to you.
Thanks, Rob. Good morning. As Rob mentioned, my name is Brian Rounds. I've spent most of the last two decades working in energy policy. I'm based in South Dakota, so I've been fortunate enough to be involved in market formation in both the East and the West. And I was on the initial committee of state regulators that created the Midwest Renewable Energy Tracking System, or MRETS, as we used to call it, and we now call it Clean Counts, which is a much better name. Today, I spend most of my time helping our clients on state regulatory and regional market issues, with a specific focus on the Southwest Power Pool, or SPP. For this webinar, our focus is on the West and how states can achieve their energy decarbonization goals in this new era. Having worked on both sides of the interconnection, it's been obvious to me that the cultures are very different. The West has always been at the forefront of clean energy policymaking. However, there is a lot of nuance in how we track what energy is being generated and what energy is being consumed. And market developments in the West are really highlighting some of the shortcomings of the tools that we used up to this point. As we move to higher decarbonization goals, we also need to move to more complex tools that offer a higher resolution or granularity. TVs are an obvious analogy as we move from the old CRT tube TVs to LCDs to 1080p to 4K and now even up to 8K. We've been getting a much clearer picture of what was happening on the screen. Rob likes to suggest that we're currently working with an abacus and that we need to move on to something more like an iPhone. So today we're going to talk about what tools currently exist, what new solutions are out there, and what more is needed to align the tools and systems with the decarbonization leadership and impact being pursued by states and voluntary markets in the West. Now, before getting into any questions, I'm going to go down the line and ask each of our speakers to introduce themselves and the solutions they're working on. I also want to make sure that this isn't just a sales pitch, so I'm going to ask each of you to also tell us how you're driven by service. Wenbo, I'll start with you.
Thank you, Brian, and thank you, Rob, for inviting us to this webinar. So my name is Wenbo Shi. I'm the founder and CEO of Singularity Energy. We are a technology provider that works with utilities and grid operators to help them track emissions and also provide services on top of the data. Some of our example customers include MISO. We have emission dashboards, MISO.singularity.energy. Everyone can get access to highly granular emission data directly coming from the MISO system data. We also work with Southern Company on the utility side to help them manage some of the green tariffs and help their customers get access to highly granular, transparent emission data from our services. So this is not a sales pitch because at Singularity, we're all energy nerds. So we're very data-driven. We debated a lot about different technologies, different philosophies, different methodologies. So we're not really driven by selling, you know, our platform or software. I think we're also driven by, you know, getting to the ground source data so that we can use the data to unlock use cases that can drive the grid decarbonization, which is the common goal, you know, of our mission. So I'll stop here and then hand it over back to Brian.
Thanks, Wenbo. Alex, please introduce yourself.
Hey, all. Alex Piper here. I'm the head of U.S. Policy and Markets for Energy Tag. Energy Tag is a global nonprofit that we advocate for and develop standards to guide the transition towards granular certificate issuance and usage. So in practice, that means we do three things, essentially. We develop standards for granular certificate issuance and a granular certificate defined by an hourly time-stamped energy attribute certificate that can be used for greater temporal and locational matching. Our standards are open source, developed with public input, and hopefully will help guide the ongoing transition to more accurate clean energy accounting. this summer, we've announced our first three accredited granular certificate issuers, which is very exciting. We also do quite a bit of policy advocacy, so we engage with policymakers and stakeholders and opportunities to implement more accurate electricity accounting, examples including in the U.S. specifically, the 45V clean hydrogen tax credits, state CES and RPS reform and implementation, power source disclosure, and more. We're also involved in international standards development, so the Greenhouse Gas Protocol and Science-Based Targets Initiative and ISO Scope 2 electricity accounting updates are all ongoing, and we're involved in all three of those processes. Finally, we do market engagement. So we work with market actors and registries to support efforts to do greater granular electricity procurement, the strategy of matching more load on an hourly and locational basis. As a mission-oriented nonprofit, our work is focused on effective and rapid grid decarbonization by realigning clean energy markets to more closely match the physical realities of how the grid actually operates. It's not a sales pitch because we do not sell anything. We're driven by the opportunity to support effective grid decarbonization as fast as possible. And then a couple of quick notes on just sort of the theory of change here and why we operate in this space. A significant amount of peer-reviewed research shows that greater hourly and locational matching of electricity procurement to usage results in more concrete decarbonization by driving incentives for storage and clean firm technologies that will actually help decarbonize the grid at every hour of the day in every location. Finally, today's rules, sort of this, you know, blurry version of clean energy accounting where you can claim solar at night or wind from Texas up in Maine, it encourages high volume renewable deployment and procurement, which is not a terrible thing, not a bad thing. There's no reason to disparage. But it does mean that we continue, as those rules stay in place, we rely heavily on thermal generators to do grid balancing and provide services that batteries and clean firm technologies could also perform in a decarbonized grid. That puts costs onto the entire system and drives upward pressure on electricity rates for all ratepayers, something that we are seeing aggressively right now. So a granular accounting structure in which load is matched to clean supply on an hourly and locational basis sends the right signals for investments in those storage and clean firm technologies, which can help reduce the reliance on more costly grid balancing thermal generators and put downward pressure on rates everywhere. This is why we describe this as sort of an efficient, effective decarbonization strategy. Really happy to be here. Thanks for having me and look forward to the discussion.
Well, thanks, Alex. Our last speaker is James Critchfield. And I just have to say, I'm going to let him introduce himself, but, we're pretty excited at Clean Counts to have been able to pick him up after a wonderful career at EPA and given his history and knowledge in this field, we're just really excited. So James, go ahead.
Yeah. Thanks, Brian. And hello, everybody. As was mentioned, I just recently joined Clean Counts. I'm super excited about that. I'm assuming the position of head of registry and market integrity. And for those of you who are not familiar with Clean Counts, we are a 501c4 nonprofit organization, and we are the market leader in energy attribute tracking in North America, representing roughly about 40% of certificates issued in this region. And our mission is really revolving around tracking the power that's generated and delivered to customers across U.S. Energy grids, where, you know, the physical energy that we consume often tells us little about its origin or the resources that produced it. And so these certificates that Clean Counts creates helps add credibility and confidence to a wide range of stakeholders by ensuring that we have a clear picture of what is going on in the power grid and when and where power is being generated and ultimately delivered for useful consumer needs. We also happen to track a number of other types of renewable energy fuels, you know, biogas and other things. So we also provide that type of functionality for different types of programs and policies that we support. In my role, I am overseeing the development and governance of a high fidelity registry that Clean Counts operates, which is effectively climate aligned and also tech forward in terms of how we are approaching the market. But we're also taking a very customer and market first perspective with respect to our platform and the service that we're delivering. Prior to Clean Counts, as was mentioned, I worked for about two decades at the U.S. EPA, and prior to my departure earlier this year from federal service, I led the EPA Green Power Partnership Program. This program worked with a range of organizations here in the United States to voluntarily choose how their power is generated and do it through credible practices, and largely relied on tracking system and instruments such as Clean Counts to validate what those transactions were. And so these were voluntary market applications that the federal government at the time was supporting. In the past, I've also advised on a range of other programs and initiatives, including RE100. I sat on the Green East Standards Board for a while, as well as participated in various greenhouse gas protocol initiatives and updates. And I've also previously worked for a solar developer.
All right. I'm gonna to kick this off with the first actual question, I'm gonna come back to you, James, try to help us lay out sort of the current state of things. So as we consider the circumstances of a new era in energy and emissions leadership, could you discuss a bit about where we have come from so that our audience can ground themselves on where we currently stand?
Sure. So this story arc of this history is, you know, several decades long. So for simplicity's sake, I'm going to just focus on a few areas that I think help define the past in terms of energy and emissions leadership and what sort of trends have led us to today. So the first area that I want to talk about is sort of the regulatory and voluntary market context. As many of us are aware, 28 states plus the District of Columbia have established renewable portfolio standard mandates, which require electricity suppliers to meet minimum percentages of renewable resources as part of their standard delivery service. RPS policies provide effectively a minimum floor or baseline of what is going to occur, and therefore you as a buyer know that if you were to do nothing with your choices and how your power is generated, you would get effectively what the state RPS mandate would deliver to you over time. And these mandates are designed to increase in many cases up to higher percentages as time moves on. Voluntary markets, however, are in contrast, are made up of consumers who wish to go above and beyond what is otherwise required by law. And so this is usually organizations like corporate entities, higher education institutions, nonprofits, small businesses, and even residences who wish to make an investment in some form or fashion that is not going to count towards that minimum baseline of regulation, but be additive. It is kind of the original additionality concept that was applied in the market leading up, through time to today. This idea that voluntary buyers invest in sources that are surplus to regulations have been incredibly impactful. The voluntary market has contributed significant demand for clean sources of renewables, and to date has actually resulted in far more units of capacity installed than what regulation has delivered. So particularly of late. Tracking systems have played an important role around keeping track of what these sources are between regulatory and voluntary markets, which has been particularly important in order to avoid double counting and also ensure that consumers know what their private investments are and what they can claim around those investments. In just to give some numbers to the impact that these markets together have had, if you look back at 2000 non-hydroelectric power sources as a percentage of total retail electricity sales was somewhere in the range of single percent levels, so 2 to 3%. If you added in the existing hydropower, you could add another 6%. So we're somewhere in the 7 to 8% level of total renewables as a percent of total retail sales. Fast forward now, it's 25 years, and we have seen hydropower still hovering around the 6% level, and non-hydropower renewable sources have increased by up to about 19%. So for a total of close to 25% of total retail sales across both. So it's really important just to keep in mind that voluntary markets and regulatory markets play two different roles. One sets the floor, the other allows you to build on top of that floor, accelerate the pace of investment, accelerate the pace of meeting certain energy goals and emissions targets, both from a consumer perspective, but also for ratepayers. And so essentially we want to try to allow for voluntary markets to flourish so that they can reduce the amount of renewables that needs to be invested in through regulation pathways. Now moving on to one other topic. Energy and emissions policy interactions are something that one should be thoughtful about as well. Many states, while building on these RPS mandates, have also established emissions policies. Some examples of these are the Renewable Greenhouse Gas Initiative that is basically in the East Coast, but we also have California and some other West Coast states that have also set up emissions policies. These policies interrelate with energy policies, and in some cases can have some different effects on each other, which is important to be thoughtful about as you design these policies. They can also have the impact of undermining some voluntary market claims and the interest of voluntary market actors to take action, particularly if those voluntary market actors are trying to reduce their emissions through their investments in clean energy technologies. They need to know that those private investments are conveyed that value proposition. And then lastly, I want to just mention infrastructure. What makes all of this go are the 9 or so tracking systems that across the U.S. keep track of the regulatory and voluntary market aspects of the of what consumers are buying and taking credit for. And so being able to have credible tracking systems that are comprehensive and detailed enough and can serve both the regulations as well as the voluntary market are incredibly important in making sure the credibility is there. So I'll pass it back to you, Brian.
Thanks, James. Alex, I want you to kind of elaborate on some of the things that James was talking about. I know that you guys are interested in avoiding double counting, interested in avoiding sort of the energy and emissions interactions from some creating the wrong incentives and potentially undermining the voluntary market. You want to elaborate on any of those topics in your experience?
Yeah, for sure. I think just picking right up where James left off there, the foundation that James is describing, the sort of infrastructural foundation of the tracking systems in the U.S., but also globally, is critical to then implement and to act on all of the different policies regulations and voluntary standards that are constantly evolving and being considered. So Energy Tags standard for GC issuance essentially describes the pathway or the direction that these tracking systems in the US can take, the different elements that are needed, the different software pieces, the different types of data that would be required on certificates matched to energy that can then be used and leveraged for a number of different purposes. It might be for clean hydrogen certification to make sure that the electricity used for electrolysis meets the definition under the federal tax guidance. Or it might be in the voluntary market consideration where a company has a target to match a certain percentage of its hours with clean electricity as opposed to its overall annual load. So I think that sort of foundation is super, super important, and getting those tools accelerated is critical. And that's where obviously Singularity and Clean Counts are leading the way. And I hope to hear more about that. The one other piece I just kind of talked to here is, as James mentioned, we have these sort of existing regulatory markets with one set of accounting frameworks, which are all a little bit different. And then we have voluntary markets, like the Greenhouse Gas Protocol that do different kind of accounting frameworks in which companies can say, here's what we've procured and here's how that looks in an emissions form. These things are changing, and alignment here can be super, super valuable. So right now, the Greenhouse Gas Protocol Scope 2 process is underway. This framework will change the way corporates do their Scope 2 electricity accounting, and the direction of travel as indicated by the Greenhouse Gas Protocol, you can check their latest blog on their website, looks like it's moving towards a more temporal and locational granular matching standard. This public comment period will be open in October, so quick flag on keeping your eye out for that. But if the regulatory markets don't sort of align with a similar accounting framework, we're going to lose sort of an opportunity for greater integrity and greater impact within those regulatory markets, which, like James mentioned, sort of set this floor and then allow for the voluntary market to sort of build off of that place. We see today, you know, in state RPS and CES policies, the ability to procure electricity from across the country at different times to then match load at another time within a state. And these two things are sort of in tension with modernizing the way in which we want to account for clean electricity so that we can drive the real outcomes we want to see. The key here is we really need incentives to be aligned with the way electricity actually works, because that's what's going to drive the investments and the deployment in a way that the grid actually responds to and will effectively decarbonize and efficiently decarbonize without sort of a piecemeal scattershot type of deployment that we would see should today's sort of market structure incentives stay the way they are. So it's this two-piece, you know, alignment where we have the sort of infrastructure and data that allows us to then do this greater or more accurate and more effective policy and regulatory development.
Thanks, Alex. All right, let's let Wembo back in this conversation. Moving on to some new solutions. I want to talk generally kind of about what solutions are out there today and what's needed to align today's tools and systems with the leadership that we're seeing in the West. So Wembo, how would you describe the trajectory of the future based on where we've come from? And feel free to make your answers specific to the West.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. Thanks, Brian. So I think when we talk, you know, when talking about the trajectory of where we're going, I think Alex already mentioned this. I think there are probably like three high-level trends that we're seeing, right? So like the first trend is going more granular, right? From, you know, annual, monthly tracking to, you know, hourly, sometimes even sub-hourly tracking, right? So the time granularity is definitely getting, you know, greater for more transparency, more accuracy, but also the location granularity as well, right? Especially when you are looking at, you know, tracking emissions or tracking generation from a consumption perspective, not only a generation perspective, like how you know, where you consume your electricity, you know, that brings the locational granularity aspect into the center. So I think being granular is definitely one of the, you know, one of the biggest trends that we've seen in the past few years, that people are looking for more granular data, more accurate data so that they can better reflect, you know, whatever frameworks that you're trying to use, right? Whether that's location-based, whether that's market-based or even consequential, you know, more granular data is always going to be the foundation to enable you to get a better picture, no matter which frameworks that you want to use. So I think granularity is definitely one of the biggest trends. I think the second high-level trend that we're seeing is shifting from a pure generation view or supply side view into a consumption slash, you know, customer view, right? Because if you look at some of the RPS and some of the existing tracking systems, they were initially designed for compliance purposes. It was not designed to answer the question of where my power comes from or where my electricity comes from for the customers or for consumption. So that's why if you look at existing, clean energy tracking systems, or registries, right? They only track generation. They don't track consumption, right? So there's no connection that you can directly make between the generation and consumption in one system. So you have to do like multiple systems and then bring them all together, right? So I think that's another trend, which is increasingly more and more companies, even individuals, as James said, right? Like, you know, they're trying to use whatever market instruments that are available today, and try to really answer that question of where my electricity comes from at a granular level, right? So the question is, you know, it's not only about tracking generation, but it's also about tracking your consumption and then matching the generation to the consumption based on some relationships, right? And you can argue about how you want to do that matching process, right? So there are different, I would say, accounting frameworks or even philosophies behind how you make that connection between generation and consumption, right? Some people would argue, you know, you follow the physics, right? You follow the power flow, you follow the, you know, the physics, or the energy market, right? And then you can also try to make that consumption, connection between consumption and generation following, contracts or contractual relationships, whether that's, you know, energy market, contracts or attribute market contracts, right? So those are all, you know, like market instruments that you can also use to track electricity to answer that question, right? So no matter which way you want to use, the underlying data is the foundation to help you get that picture, right? So I like the framing that Rob and Brian showed in the slide, right? The TV analogy there, right? It's like you want to show the highest resolution of the picture, no matter what picture you want to show there, right? So that system, that underlying data system or infrastructure is super, super important to help us better understand this problem from different aspects and from different perspectives. But unfortunately, that infrastructure doesn't exist today because, you know, like there are lots of different data sources that you need to answer this question, right? Not only, you know, the granular certificates that EnergyTech is doing, which is one important piece of the puzzle, but there are also other data sources, right? Like AMI data, you know, granular consumption data, you know, granular generation data, right? I mean, there are lots of like different pieces of the puzzle that you need to make sure that you all bring them together. And they're also aligned. They're high quality data, right? So there won't be any double counting or double, you know, like double issuance across those different systems. So I think that's the second, you know, trend that we're seeing is, you know, shifting from supply side only to more, you know, from generation side only, supply side only to consumption as well as customer's perspective. I would say the last trend is more around procurement strategies or policy making or market design, right? So which is like, you know, increasingly there are newer procurement strategies that companies are trying to adopt, and there are new mechanisms that people can utilize to try to change behaviors, right? Because the you know, the data can serve for different purposes, right? So one of the first foundational use cases for all the data is for tracking purposes, for reporting purposes. But once you have that data as foundation, then you want to use the data to make decisions, right? Once you're talking about decision making and incentivizing certain behaviors, then you are talking about potential market design or potential procurement strategies, policy strategies. RPS is just one of them. James already talked about that, right? There could be other, maybe the next generation RPS or next generation, you know, emissions / clean energy, you know, policy making, right? Which, you know, Brian, you asked about what's happening in the West, and there are lots of like ongoing discussions about, you know, those new next generation, you know, policies, as well as some of the initiatives that is happening in CAISO and SPP, which are trying to use the data from the wholesale market to enable some of those next generation policies, right? So how to design a policy is also a separate layer from the underlying data and, you know, tracking methodology conversation, right? Because with the same data, you can also design lots of different policies depending on what your goals are, right? So for example, if a certain state, you know, cares about the generation that is happening within their state boundaries, then, you know, you may need to use certain data types, right, to support the policy there. So I think, you know, like, you know, I think, you know, everyone needs to think about like what is the objective that you're trying to incentivize utilizing different types of data, because the answer could be a little bit different, right? So because Alex was talking about incentivizing investment into, you know, clean firm generation or storage. Great, right? That's your objective. Then granular certificates can definitely get you there. But some other policy making or some other policymaker may have different objectives in mind, right? So I think having that clear objective laid out and then making sure that your methodology as well as your data is supporting you to achieve your objective is super, super important, because, you know, a lot of the times we're seeing people are using the wrong data, right, for a different objectives, or the policymakers are not thinking about the, you know, the right set of data to support the successful implementation of their policymaking. You know, I think the message that I'm trying to send here is from a implementation standpoint, a lot of the methodology / new technology already exist, right? So we already demonstrated this with MISO, with, you know, Southern Company, and there are a few other new utilities that we're hoping to announce pretty soon. So there are already examples of highly granular, highly local data, you know, highly sophisticated accounting and tracking mechanisms to ensure there's no double counting within the system. The next step is to, you know, inviting everybody to think about how to utilize that granular data and this next generation technology to design new market to incentivize certain behaviors to achieve, you know, different objectives from different states or from different stakeholders. I think the opportunities are, you know, are huge, right? Because this underlying infrastructure can support a variety of different types of use cases, a variety of different types of policy that can achieve a lot of like very good consequences. But at the same time, I think it's important for, you know, the policymakers to understand what is available, and then for the system operators, you know, as well as all the stakeholders, you know, the registries, the, you know, wholesale energy market operators, utilities, to all come together so that we have some common understandings, as Alex already mentioned, right? Some common groundwork, right? So that we can bring all the pieces together and then support the next generation, you know, policies or, you know, procurement strategies that we want to utilize to achieve the same goal, which is to decarbonize the grid eventually.
Yeah, no, I'm sort of watching some of that play out in the West today as I watch SPP create their day ahead market. You know, I've noticed there's a lot of interdependence between sort of the policy making and the market development. Just for an example, the state of Washington has a carbon pricing program, and as SPP is building out their day ahead market, they, you know, in one case, they're moving to a 5-minute dispatch that you could actually track generation through. And at the same time, Washington needs to make sure that their rules are aligned with that type of a market dispatch. And so watching that interplay has been really interesting. It's almost like a chicken and egg. You know, they need to work very closely together to make sure that you don't have double counting, things like that. Alex, I'm going to kind of throw the question over to you. Same question. You know, how would you describe the trajectory of the future based on where we've come from?
Yeah, I like that from Wembo. I think I like the sort of like the policy. What's the goal? And then work backwards, knowing that all of the goals for this sort of mid to late energy transition we are now moving into, especially in the Western states, will require more and more granular data, more accurate accounting, more, you know, I guess I don't want to repeat granular again, but just more physical realism in the way that we are tracking electricity, which cannot be physically tagged on an electron to electron basis. So again, I agree that sort of the different targets or goals or different policy implementations will require slightly different versions, but all of it does come back to this foundation of we need to know more about where, when electricity is being produced, where, when electricity is being consumed, and then start to align the frameworks around, that information. I think a couple points that I'd make specifically, you know, focus on the West, that sort of illustrate that dynamic. So recently, earlier this year, California went through a rulemaking process for their power source disclosure program, which will now require load-serving entities to report their electricity supply on an hourly basis in California. That's going to provide greater transparency, hopefully opportunities for more voluntary market engagement for customers to demand or request sort of different electricity procurement decisions from their suppliers. And that reporting on an hourly basis, that's sort of like the policy goal, that reporting on an hourly basis can be backed up by hourly certificates. It's not required in the rulemaking or in the law, but it would be a huge value add to enable, you know, greater consistency, accountability, transparency, and then also could build on another level to potentially look into state RPS reform and other policy and regulatory adjustments that then build on this sort of hourly certificate structure already in place for this other policy goal. Additionally, in Oregon, they recently passed the Power Act, which is sort of a landmark attempt at the state level to address load growth and its impact on ratepayers. So it's going to require utilities to design tariffs for large loads, data centers, to reduce or to remove impacts on ratepayer costs. So that's the sort of policy outcome. What I think is really interesting is that we can see a world in which implementation of that policy requires those tariffs to have some level of hourly matched clean electricity provided to those data centers, because we know via research and modeling and understanding of how the power system works, that when we align those two things, the supply and demand on an hourly and spatial basis, that actually takes that strain on the entire grid, which then gets passed to the ratepayers. It takes it off the table. It sort of reduces that stress. So again, sort of, I think some useful Western ambition focused contexts that have different policies that all still require some level of granularity and the value of having these hourly certificates with attributes included becomes more and more clear, even though they're sort of playing to different broader policy outcomes and targets. So I think that's sort of like, that's the message I think we'd want to get across here, where we started from, where we're going. We're moving beyond the age of we just need to get renewables onto the grid, especially in these, you know, ambitious Western state policies. We are beyond that point. We're now into the era of how do we integrate what we already have? How do we continue to decarbonize? And how do we do so in a way that isn't going to put the burden back on ratepayers in a way that is unfair, especially in this era of demand side growth? And all of those pieces require storage, flexibility, new clean firm. They require a lot of different strategies and a lot of different procurement outcomes that we can't just force. So we need to figure out what the incentives are going to be, what the market structure will look like. And that oftentimes comes back to, well, we need some mechanism, and Energy Tag is focused on the certificate side of things, to make it clear when and where that supply is missing, to provide real value on the time that we do not have clean electricity, and then to provide the opportunity for corporates, for states, for regulatory frameworks to then say, we need more clean energy at this time in this place. Here is how we can demonstrate that we are doing so. So I think that's sort of like the the message of this sort of conversation is like, ambition is really good, and the way to actually achieve that ambition is being built today.
Thanks. Yeah, and you touched on some of these challenges that we're going to see going forward. So I'm going to kind of pitch that question to James. You know, what are some of the other challenges we're going to see as the market seeks to continue its growth and progress on advancing these clean energy technologies and emission reductions?
Yeah, I think, you know, with the era that we're moving into, with the extreme load growth that's expected to come, definitely state policy is going to play an oversized role moving forward as well. I would say, you know, in an area like the Western states, or, you know, where WEC sort of the Western Electricity Coordinating Council kind of covers, there is a lot of different approaches that in different states that have policies that interact across the region. And I think there is some thoughtfulness that is, I think, oftentimes hard for regulators to get their head around, because they have a legislative intent that they're trying to develop a rule or an implementation around. And ultimately they sort of have a purview of their regulatory reach. And that doesn't often extend beyond the state borders. And therefore, sometimes it creates some interesting dynamics of how certain policies relate to other market interests and needs that may not be within that reach. And so there's some states that have passed emissions policies that are slightly different in their structure. They're more like cap and trade programs. And how those emissions policies are being implemented with, you know, which are basically policies that say, hey, we're going to deliver a certain minimum amount of carbon-free electricity, let's say, to ratepayers in our state. If they don't back that by market instruments, and those market instruments go out to, say, someone else in the marketplace that is not in that state but is in the region, you potentially have double counting issues and other kinds of unforeseen problems that ultimately undermine both the regulatory policy as well as maybe the voluntary market participant who thinks they're buying something that is privately claimable by themselves, but ultimately is also being claimed by ratepayers. And so those kinds of interactions are, I think, really important to get our head around. And kind of going back a little bit to what Alex mentioned about the California policy and the 24/7, constructs and frameworks and reporting that needs to be done. I mean, it's really great right now that, like tracking systems like Clean Counts have already piloted and implemented, hourly tracking. We have a proven system that has been working for a while. Both a front end and back end of that system that is clearly being focused on that customer need, and we continue to work on that to improve it and make it more accessible. So I think, you know, the ability of stakeholders, policymakers, and others to take advantage of those systems and, you know, not recreate the wheel and those kinds of things. Build off of what we already know, how we already do this, what we've learned from building these types of systems is going to be really incredibly important in moving forward and being able to bring the kinds of data that these systems are going to need in order to inform the markets that they're serving.
Ryan, I'll just note that we've got a question in the chat if you want to go to that now.
Yeah, that'd be great. Sarabi? From the Low Impact Hydro Institute?
Absolutely. Sarabi, go ahead. I took you off mute.
Perfect. Well, thank you so much for this opportunity to be here, but also hearing all of you talk about the importance and value of granular accounting is just so top of our mind at the Low Impact Hydropower Institute. We're a national nonprofit working on reducing impacts of hydropower, and one of the issues we've been focused on is hydropower reservoir emissions. And this question is more for Wenbo and Alex. You know, in the Pacific Northwest and West more broadly, it looks like there a lot of generation comes from hydropower, and some of them have very large reservoirs, and we know that operations can lead to emissions, and we published a paper on this. The greenhouse gas protocol is going to start requiring reservoir emission reporting, and it's going to come out later this year. And as more states move to the CES paradigm, you know, it's important that from our perspective that any like claims or assumptions around a technology's clean characteristic are backed up, again, going to James' point on having the need for that tracking. And so I'm curious to hear from Alex and Wenbo whether and how you're seeing hydropower emissions getting factored into tracking systems or even getting included in tracking systems.
So Greg Miller, who is on our team, maybe this is a question that you can give a first pass.
Yeah. Sure. Yeah. Thanks, Wenbo. Hi, everyone. I'm Greg Miller. I'm the research and policy lead at Singularity and also sit on the technical working group that's revising the GHG protocol scope 2 standard right now. It's a great question about hydropower. You know, I think traditionally we're used to tracking emissions, you know, from a direct or stack standpoint, like what are the emissions actually associated with, you know, driving the turbine of the power generator. You know, all generation technologies have some GHG emissions somewhere in their life cycle. Like, you know, we know that there's emissions associated with building and maintaining solar farms, for example. But generally, we only count or have counted emissions associated with the generation of power itself. And so part of this comes down to like where we draw the line between what's considered a direct emission and what's considered maybe an upstream emission. I think, you know, traditionally we've counted, you know, conventional hydropower as zero emissions because there aren't CO2 emissions associated with turning the turbine. Although, you know, maybe a parallel example is geothermal. You know, there's certain geothermal technologies that, that are open loop systems that release non-atmospheric CO2 to the atmosphere as part of power generation. And so we don't generally consider, those geothermal technologies to be zero emissions. That is something that we currently track. And so I think with evolving research on how, greenhouse gases are moving, from, you know, underground or underwater into the atmosphere as a result of power generation, this is definitely something that, you know, we can, you know, as our understanding evolves, you know, look at how we implement and whether that's counted as an upstream emission or a direct emission, I think, will evolve with our scientific understanding and the guidance.
Yeah. And I think that's sort of the, again, the sort of stepwise approach where the GHG accounting frameworks that sort of are building these rules and constantly evolving and adapting to determine sort of what are the emissions characteristics of different types of generation are then layered into things like registries and GC issuance bodies that then can say maybe there are low and high impact hydropower assets that are determined to have different emissions characteristics, and those attributes are tagged to the electricity generation that results from those different operations. And those are then implemented into the markets, and those are tracked within the registry systems. So that's sort of like the process that I think we will see as these kinds of conversations become, as the sort of the different accounting frameworks are developed and the announcements are made and the science, is ongoing. So that's kind of how I think the tracking systems play into that. It's not really a, you know, from an energy tag standard development process and from a registry issuance process, it's not a subjective matter, right? It's more about making sure that the accounting frameworks reflect the, or that the tracking systems reflect the existing accounting frameworks in a way that everyone is aware of and transparent and then can make procurement decisions and hopefully with greater impact in the long run. I think the one other part of this conversation that does matter for hydropower is this idea of fair allocation of existing clean electricity and how do voluntary markets sort of address that. And it might be way too deep a dive for the moment, but the Greenhouse Gas Protocol Scope 2 update process is sort of grappling with this question of how do we do accounting of clean electricity for corporate voluntary actors in a way that both reflects the value of having certain clean electricity that is already on the grid and sustaining the power system, while also incentivizing that action that James mentioned earlier, that sort of extra regulatory action that's sort of on top of what already exists. And hydropower definitely sort of fits into that mold of that balancing act, I should say.
Yeah, I might add to Alex's thoughts on that. So the good news is that Clean Counts actually does track hydropower in our system, pumped hydropower, and it's captured under what we call an AEC or an alternative energy certificate, which is slightly different than, say, a renewable energy certificate. I think one of the things that just kind of tying this back to some of the comments on the Greenhouse Gas Protocol, existing or current guidance under Scope 2 does suggest that if you are sort of looking at a system, an energy system where there may be a zero direct emissions generating source, that if that energy that ultimately created that opportunity is upstream, that you can't just account it as a zero emitting resource. And so that kind of moves pumped hydropower into more of a storage realm where much like a lithium ion battery, and I'll kick it back to Alex to talk a little bit about energy tag standards around this, but we need to figure out how we account for energy attributes through storage technologies, including pumped hydropower, where we can essentially assess what kind of emissions footprint there is with creating that, in this case with pumped hydro, a head on which we can then power, you know, generate power by releasing that water at times when we need it. And what we don't want to have happen is pump hydropower using dirtier sources of energy, but the market in terms of the demand signal being sent as it's not, meaning it's a zero emitting source. And then we end up building and encouraging essentially behaviors that don't, you know, result in the clean energy future and, you know, reliable energy future that we need. So I don't know, Alex, if you have any thoughts on the energy storage issue.
Yeah, maybe we'll have to send over an entirely different webinar, all focused on energy storage tracking. It's a beast. But yeah, EnergyTag does have within our standard, and we are continuing to develop guidance around how to incorporate storage tracking. So trying to align again sort of the certificates that are being issued at the point of electricity production, transferred through a storage asset, whether it be battery or pumped hydro or another type, and then to discharge, and how to make sure that that chain is connected in a way that accounts for natural losses along the path and for the discharge of those certificates in a way that is physically, you know, high integrity, transparent, and physically realistic. So our standard essentially treats storage as a consumption device as it charges, and then a production device as it discharges, to put it as simply as possible. But we get into some of the weeds more, and we are currently working on an update of that standard in particular for public comment to be probably later this year. So you can keep an ear out for that.
Thanks. Great question. We're running out of time here, so I'm going to ask kind of one more closing question for everybody before we close out, and ask you to keep your answers fairly short since we have about a minute and a half. So, you know, trying to get a feeling for sort of your vision for Western state decarbonization, and you know, what do you think that stakeholders in the West, whether that's, you know, legislators, regulators, tracking systems, buyers, what should they be keeping in mind as they navigate kind of these early stages of our clean energy future? I'm going to start with, I'm going to go Wenbo, and then James, and then Alex.
I would encourage every stakeholder to think about the objectives first, and then forget about existing system, forget about the existing limitations, and then think about, you know, how we can design a new system from the ground up to support that objectives. How does that look like? And then we can figure out how that new system should be working with existing systems to making sure that there is consistency across those different pieces of the puzzle. I think it's important for us to, get rid of some of the current limitations and then think about the North Star. And then back off from there to talk about the implementation for that. Technology exists. It's not going to be a technology problem that is going to slow us down.
My next, Brian?
Yep. Thanks.
Well, I think from, sort of a tracking system perspective, one of the things that we see in the Western states is that, WEC has recently announced that effectively they are going to separate REGIS, which is the Renewable Energy Tracking System for the Western region, from WEC and its control, and have sort of suggested that they're looking at perhaps building a new system from the ground up. And I guess one thing that I would consider, given that Clean Counts has a limited contract in supporting REGIS and delivering on many of these new fundamental features, is continuity is a really big part of how this market works, and having systems in place that can work and already work and have proven to work are really important parts of this. So I would say that essentially being able to ensure continuity, continue to focus on climate as sort of the North Star element of what drives the features of the tracking systems, and ultimately listening to the customer and the market in terms of what they need are really, really important in being successful. And to the extent that the West plays such a big oversized role in market and energy and emissions leadership, I think taking a clear step back and thinking about, like, what's the best way to move forward with tracking system infrastructure is going to be a really, really important piece to this puzzle.
Thanks, James. Alex, you get the last word.
Sure. Yeah, real quickly, I think I would love to emphasize the idea that granular accounting, this hourly locational accounting, this issuance of certificates, and then matching that to load. This is the high definition version of clean electricity accounting. This is what most effectively aligns action and impact. The market standards of today got us here, and now we need the standards for tomorrow to sort of continue to guide climate ambition into the next phase of the energy transition effectively and efficiently. And to really echo Wenbo, this is not a technology problem. This is not something we can't figure out or are trying to figure out. This is something we know how to do, and the technology solutions exist. So we have the tools, and now we just need to implement.
Great. Thank you, Alex. All right. I think this is all we've got for today. I'm going to ask that everybody kind of give a silent round of applause under their mute button to our awesome panel here. And Rob, please take us home. You're on mute, Rob.
Fantastic. And thank you all so much for joining us. The recording of today's presentation will be circulated to everyone and also available on our website later tomorrow or the day after. So thank you again for joining us. Have a wonderful rest of your day.